Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
You could possibly forget those lines at this stage is beyond me. Well, sometimes it catches you out, you know, you're just unaware, and then you're like, boom, my brain is, the synapses have just not kicked in.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great.
Big week, Emma.
I haven't slept past 2 a.m. for, I want to say, 7 whole days.
Oh, are you scared?
I've got a number of things that make me nervous, but mostly I keep having anxiety dreams that I've accidentally done plagiarism.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think I have.
I don't think you have.
I'm fairly certain I haven't.
Yeah.
But I just keep worrying about it.
Well, I honestly don't think you have. Yeah. I know you. You didn't copy and paste.
I'm not a classic plagiarist.
No. It's not your vibe.
No, but just, I don't know what it is. It's because I was accused of plagiarism a couple of times when I was doing my A-levels. Because basically I went from not working very hard at all to getting my shit together, and the teachers couldn't really understand what was going on. So right. They were like, just like, you did plagiarism. I was like, no, I didn't.
Maybe your teachers are going to buy your book now and be like.
Yeah, exactly.
I doubt that's the case. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm nervous about. I guess I think people will love it. But yeah, there's always that fear. It's like, you know, you've worked really hard on something for what feels like fucking ages. And yeah, I just hope that people like it. It's so exciting though.
It's so exciting. And we've done a couple of interviews with national media organisations, haven't we?
Mm-hmm, you have.
So hopefully they'll be out this week or next week?
No, I think this week. I'd say pick up The Sun on Thursday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And pick up the Daily Mail and You magazine at some point.
Indeed. And so today is Tuesday. Our book comes out in 2 days. Two days. Mm. And yeah, I'm absolutely stoked. I managed to, my dad called me today and I was like, have you pre-ordered yet? And he's like, no. I was like, Dad. And he's like, I don't pre-order books. I'll wait until like, and I was like, if you pre-order it now, it's pretty much going to be the same as if you ordered a normal book that was already out. Like it's out now pretty much. Just
Can you just do the impression of your dad again?
I don't really order books unless they're out. That's not anywhere near how he sounds. He's from the Wirral, which is near Liverpool. He doesn't sound like that. He does sound northern, but not, I don't know. I just can't do my dad's accent. It's really hard.
Sounded like a Beatle just then. So.
I suppose he does sound maybe a bit like a Beatle.
There was a bit of a Paul McCartney vibe there.
Yeah, that's not entirely accurate of my dad. But thanks. That's good. Okay. And yeah, so I hope everyone enjoys getting the book on Thursday. Oh, do you know what I'd love? If you get the book on Thursday, take a picture and we'll share it. I'd love that. If there were people sending us books with pictures of the book, I'd be like, oh, just die of happiness.
I would die of happiness too. That would make me so happy. It's quite a striking cover.
It is quite a striking cover. Yeah. Yeah.
God, we're very boring. I promise it's not going to be like this forever.
Well, just I think this is the last pod, book pod, isn't it? Well, actually, no. We might have a recording from the book launch that we're going to put out there, which you'll have to listen to as well. But we come with other good tidings. We did a competition for 10 lucky winners to get a copy of the book gratis. And so I've got some names here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Wait, first, I should probably reveal the answer to the question. So as many of you know, we asked you to tell us how many times the word fuck appears in our book.
And can I just say a lot of people really underestimated us?
A lot of people. Like, there was someone who said 600 and something times. I was like, I mean, I really love that. I'd actually probably like to give her a book just for... I mean, I was actually quite surprised how few times, because having read it, I felt like it was in there quite a lot. But then I did a search and it was, are you ready for this, guys? Drum roll. Can you do a drum roll, Emma? I can't do that noise. 13 times.
13.
I know. It's like,
ourselves down.
It's a lot less than I thought it was, guys. It's a lot less.
Yeah, I'm disappointed.
anyway, fear not. We've got 10 winners. I'm going to read their names. Well done, everyone. Right, should I just start naming names?
Yeah, just smash them out.
Okay, guys. Number one, Melissa Murta. Number two, Annika. Just Annika, like just Madonna. Number three, Hannah Greenney. Number four, Charlotte Hamilton. Number five, Jude Buscema. Number six, Jennifer Mart. Number seven, Kimberly Bugda. Number eight, Maria Adios. Number nine, Emma I. God, I'm really shit at this, aren't I? Emma I. Number 10, Claire Norman.
Hey! Congratulations, and presumably you're going to email all these people as well.
I am going to email everyone, yeah. Great. And I don't know where all of these people are from, but Maria is in Hungary. And who else have we got? Yeah, Hannah is in Australia.
Oh,
yep, there's a book going, winging its way to Australia.
Congratulations for getting quite well.
Also, guys, hot off the press, I got a message on Instagram today from someone in Australia saying that they are able to pre-order our book, and is that correct? And I said, I don't know, you tell me. And she's been able to order it.
Well, I guess if she gets it, then Australians are all having a good time.
Yeah, man. If anyone's looking for it in Australia, QBD Books is where this listener has found it. So there you go.
Okay.
We're all surprised.
I promise that you'll actually get it.
Yeah, I mean, none of us are aware of that. We don't know if it's official, but it does look like our book, so.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, who are we talking to today, Gabs?
We are talking to, oh my God, the glamorous Pippa Vosper. Pippa is a writer, presenter, and brand consultant.
We talked to her about the loss of her baby late in her pregnancy. I cried while I was editing it.
I bet. It's pretty hard going, wasn't it?
Yeah. What's interesting is that she's got her shit together so much that we had our shit together during the interview as well. Mm. No one lost it.
No one lost it, no.
But I did lose it while I was editing it.
Yeah, it's probably one of the worst stories I've heard. Yeah. I've heard some bad stories. But she doesn't let it get her. You know, she's kind of just says it quite matter of fact about what happened.
Yeah. She was just brilliant.
I guess she's probably done a lot of work. Yeah. Her book is coming out in August of 2022. And it's called Beyond Grief, Navigating the Journey of Pregnancy and Baby Loss.
Yes, I think it's going to be great. If that's kind of relevant to you, then you should really look into it. To be honest, I'll probably get it.
Pippa's great. She wears so many good dresses, man. I just can't get over how someone can wear such amazing dresses on the regs.
She, like, I think lived for a while without me knowing around the corner from me.
Oh, wow.
And I wish we could have hung out.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Back in the day, we would have got her around to my little flat to do a recording.
Yeah, we would have. God, I miss those days of doing this in person.
So do I. I just wanted to do some lingo check. An oral thesaurus, if you will. Aural. An aural thesaurus? I don't know how we pronounce it. Anyway, she talks about an ACU, that stands for Assisted Conception Unit, a.k.a. a fertility clinic. She also talks about something called a cerclage, which is a stitch that they put into the cervix to prevent a loss if the cervix has previously been weakened. Just thought I'd sort out some vocab there.
Thanks for clarifying, Emma. That's very kind.
Hey, I'm nothing if not thorough.
Indeed. Okay, well, I hope you enjoy the chat. And in the meantime, after you've listened to this, mm-hmm. after you've received our book, after you've posted about receiving our book, mm-hmm. you can
follow us on Instagram
at Big Fat Negative.
You can follow us on Twitter
at Big Fat Negative.
You can email us
bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
And you can leave us a nice review.
You can, yeah, if you like, if you fancy.
Yeah, or you can, that's it.
Yeah, I think we're just going to ask you to buy our book from now on.
Yeah, to be honest.
Any more requests can, unless you want to buy a Just Relax t-shirt, which is fair enough because they're fucking cool. In which case, you can find the link in our Instagram. All right, guys, on with the episode.
Please enjoy. I'm back.
Hello, how are you?
As fine as I was 15 seconds ago.
Oh, good. I'm glad that the time that the jingle played hasn't been a bad time for you.
No, it's been great.
We've had quite a busy time, haven't we?
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm exhausted. I've actually got quite a sore throat. So many people I know have COVID right now.
Oh, mate, don't. I actually felt a bit ill today. I'm kind of scared.
Yeah. It's. I feel like it's coming closer.
Don't get me just before the book launch.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
I know.
That's it. I haven't even thought about that.
I really hope that doesn't happen.
I'm in isolation now. That's
it. Oh God, I wish mm-hmm. I could isolate. We did a photo shoot last week. That was quite exciting.
I loved that. I had such a nice time.
Yeah. The lovely Claire Randall, who's your mate from your co-working space, isn't she?
She is my mate from my co-working space. And we just had such a chilled time.
Yeah. She was very cool.
We drank coffee and wine.
Yes, two of my favourite things.
Situation, yeah.
Took some serious photos, some cheesy ones.
Particularly Poor Claire. Cheesy. We were like, can we take some really cheesy ones of the book? And she was like, okay.
She's a bit surprised by our willingness to over-cheese ourselves. Yes. But it was great. And you guys are going to get slammed by them on Instagram.
Yes, you are.
Oh, yeah. Potentially lots of content. Work. Like it's coming your way.
Yeah. So we thought we'd take this opportunity, because you haven't heard about it enough, to talk about the book and kind of a little bit about its contents, because I think we've gone on and on and on and on and on about how great it is. We haven't really talked about what's in it.
We haven't really talked about what's in it.
No. So we thought we'd kind of talk about the process of writing it.
The process.
What's your process like?
Yeah, my process was just like going, fuck, I gotta write this fucking thing. fuck. Right. Gotta fucking write it right now. Oh God, fuck. How are we gonna do this? Over and over again. For I would say about 8 to 9 months.
Yeah.
I did it in very small increments. Do you know, it's not like you sat down and spent a month writing a book. Do you know what I mean? No. It was all little bits here and there, stolen moments.
Stolen moments. Mostly after work.
Yeah. I felt like a lot of it rolled off the tongue, because the bits that were our experience, obviously it was just like kind of easy to write.
What did you find most surprising about writing it?
I think, do you know what? We did in one of my chapters, which is about the partners going through it. Mm. And that was about, I interviewed my husband, Mr. Mm-hmm. Gabby, and he told me some stuff that I didn't really know before about his feelings when we were going through it, and how he had feared that it was going to break us up and all this stuff that was kind of new to me. It was kind of weird typing it up. I was like, well, this is strange. Yeah.
Oh, that's emotional. You also spoke to my other half.
I did. I interviewed Mr. Emma. That was fun.
Yeah. He didn't come across as totally monosyllabic.
No, he didn't. Yeah. He was quite articulate about it. So yeah, the whole chapter's about kind of, because obviously when you're going through it, often the person that doesn't have the womb that's being impregnated is often a bit like a spare part, right?
Yeah,
so we've kind of explored that a little bit.
Yeah.
What it's like being a partner.
Cool.
And what it's like going through it on your own.
Mm,
so yeah, that's my surprising bit. What's your surprising bit?
So I did a whole chapter on miscarriage, which was the one that I found hardest to write because I don't know why. Actually, I don't really know why, but I just found it incredibly difficult and emotional, and it got me having lots of conversations with friends who'd had losses. And, you know, like I interviewed somebody who, I don't know if I write this in the book actually, but was going through, like, got her BFP at the same time as me. And we were messaging each other like, oh my God, I can't believe we both got it at the same time. And then she lost the baby and I didn't.
That's so hard.
It was awful for her. And she had, like, I think she had 3 losses in total before. Gosh. And now she's got a little girl. This is lovely Amy that I'm talking about. Hi, Amy, if you're listening. And I, like, we actually spoke, like, heard each other's voices for the first time when I was interviewing her about it and what it was like.
That's crazy.
I'm digressing massively. The thing that I found most surprising for me was I wrote a whole bit on, like, the physical effects of a miscarriage or pregnancy loss, which is the term we use in the book. So, like, what happens to your body? And loads of this stuff I just had no idea about.
Yeah, it's
like
mad.
Oh, and actually in the next couple of weeks we're speaking to somebody who's written a book about that kind of thing, and she was saying that when she had one of her losses she experienced hair loss.
Wow.
Which is like one of those things that you experience after you have given birth. And like I just think we really don't talk about that stuff. Like, I know we don't talk about infertility, we don't talk massively about miscarriage, but the physical side of that stuff, God, I've literally never heard it mentioned outside of like conversations I've had with my friends and people. Yeah. Maybe a bit on here.
Yeah, it's something you don't expect when you're going through it. I think often people are taken completely by surprise, aren't they? Which is horrible, because the more prepared you are, obviously, sometimes the easier things are, even though they're hard anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I thought it's quite important to put that in the book.
Definitely.
Like, what's going to happen to your body?
Yeah.
Which bit did you like writing the most?
Did I like writing the most?
Yeah.
There is a piece in the book about me, the moment that I realized I should probably rein it in and stop drinking so much, and that was quite a funny piece to write because that was quite a funny moment in my life. I mean at the time it wasn't funny because it was wrapped up in all sorts of guilt around, like, thinking that people were judging me for still drinking when I was trying for a baby, and like, but then having that feeling of like being sad because I got my period and wanting to get shit-faced. But then, oh yeah, I mean, there's so many weird complex emotions around that time. So yeah, I wrote about that, which is felt quite funny as well as obviously quite shameful. So yeah, how about you? What was your favorite bit to write?
I think I just like I knew which bits I liked writing because I made the same joke about 5 times all the way through, and then we had to go through and like edit those bits out because I'd made the same joke. I think like just laughing at all the stupid things I did when I was going through the kind of the TTC phase.
Yeah.
Like, you know, pulling my pregnancy tests apart to see if there was a line hiding under the casing.
Yeah.
That was one that I like repeated about 5 times. just like going back over that stuff and just like kind of laughing at myself because I guess because it's in the past now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, just being so ashamed of my own behaviour. Like, what the fuck was I doing?
I mean,
Everyone
does some fucking crazy shit, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And it's okay. It's okay.
It's normal, guys. And it's acceptable. And it's totally fine. And don't be ashamed.
Do you know, I've just read Dolly Alderton's book, Ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's really good. I've never been a huge fan of hers, but she's a good novelist. And there's a whole bit in that kind of a whole theme in it, which is talking about how like the word crazy is kind of weaponized against women.
Mm-hmm.
So like if a guy ghosts you, like in the book, one of the characters gets ghosted, like in like quite advanced stage of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And she just like, she texts him a load of times, but doesn't hear back from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know if I'm giving away massive spoilers. Sorry, guys, if I am. But then
I haven't read it.
Well, I just, yeah. And then she texts, she basically, like, it's implied that she's being crazy because she's texting him loads of times and he's not responding. And it's just like, you know, the implication is that she's the one that's been crazy. When like if you're really far into a relationship and you then just disappear, that is obviously the crazy behavior.
Yeah.
But like completely. The word crazy is deployed against women. Mm. And so we often have that tendency to think we're being crazy when actually we're behaving like human normal beings.
It's true. Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. And also like the word crazy isn't always great, is it?
No, it's because... not. It's not particularly PC.
No. So, but it's just, it's really, really interesting, like the way society views like normal human behavior when females are doing it.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Maybe the next book?
Yeah, maybe the next book. I'll, plagiarize ghosts.
Dolly won't mind. She doesn't listen to this She'll podcast. Well, guys, we look forward to hearing what your favorite parts of the book are.
Yes, we do. Send us some photos. We'd love to.
Indeed.
I was going to say we'd love to hear them. But
we'd love to hear your photos.
Love to hear your photos.
Always a pleasure, guys. Always a pleasure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey Pippa, it's really nice to have you on.
Hello. Oh, thank you for having me. Hi.
How are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
Yeah?
Yep, just staring out the window, which is a nice view. For
is
me
it
today.
A view of darkness because it's dark?
Well, I actually live on a really busy road, so there's a bus passing me right now, which I just love watching people on the bus for some reason.
Give them a wave. I'm recording a podcast.
Strange. I'm a strange lady behind the curtain that just looks at people on buses as they go past.
Oh, I like that. Okay, so we start every single episode with the same question, which is tell us about your journey.
Well, for me, I had my first son after, 7 or 8 months of trying, mm-hmm. and it was incredibly easy. And I thought, wow, this is, whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't give anything a thought on fertility or loss or, I didn't really know anybody either, or nobody had been open about it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, trying naturally, what was I at the time? 36. And I thought, let's crack on because I am 36, thinking this is an older stage anyway. And it wasn't working. So then my husband and I were like, well, let's just sort of follow the ovulation path and really pay attention and, maybe not schedule things in, but really pay attention to, when we're having sex and hopefully things will crack on.
Okay,
and
then, fun stuff.
Yeah, but like literally nothing, not even any sign of anything. So then I had some tests done, just probably what every person begins with, mm-hmm. and it wasn't showing anything. There was nothing wrong. Eggs were fine. Workings were fine. Husband's sperm was fine. So continued trying. And then as I was sort of more ending of my 30s, I just said, I think we really need to go and explore IVF. Mm-hmm. So then did the research. I'd had my son at Chelsea Westminster. So I really like the hospital. I don't know. Yeah. I feel safe there. So there's an ACU there. I like the guy that we met. And we began that process. And to be honest, I didn't respond well at all. I got incredibly depressed. I put on tons of weight.
Okay.
Hated the experience. I do think, looking back, it had something to do with, and people may hate me for saying this, it had something to do with it being January. I know it sounds bizarre.
No, but I think we all understand that.
Really? And it was dark and it was gloomy and, you know, and it was unpleasant just to be in the environment where it was, you know, dark and damp. So did this on the long protocol and great, nice result. Got some good embryos, blastocyst, everything's great. So we transferred one and it worked. It was my son. And going through the pregnancy, totally fine. Like nothing, nothing. But, you know, you go through the NHS system, and this isn't to knock the NHS, but perhaps they're not as, well, I know they're not as able to give you the attention you would like. And I'd had an emergency cesarean with my first son because of preeclampsia, which is super common. I mean, this isn't a trauma.
Not lovely, though.
Not great, but it's not one of those high on the discussion levels of, you know, it was super traumatic, because it wasn't. It was just really shit. And then because my son's massive head was caught in my cervix for too long, it damaged my cervix. It was weak. But on my second pregnancy, there was really no need, or nobody really thought to check this out. So as my son, my second son, grew, my cervix was obviously opening with his weight. The heavier he got, the more my cervix was going to give way at some point. And then 5 months into my pregnancy, I remember waking up in the house, and my son had moved from sort of what I would say a higher stomach position, and he was sort of laying more pelvic area. So I woke my husband up. It was about 3 a.m. and I said, I know something's very wrong.
Right.
And so I got up and started to get dressed. And then my waters broke. I had a top on, but no underwear, no bottoms. I was sort of 3 a.m. I'm trying to get dressed, you know? Yeah. And I'd gone to the bathroom and my waters broke. And then my son's legs came out. So then,
oh my God.
Yeah. So then we could see him, and my husband just looked, and, you know, he had that look of absolute terror on his face. I mean, sweet, nice to me, but just really frightened. And oh goodness, called 999, and the love, we got someone super nice and super in control, thank God. And she just said, you're gonna have to deliver your baby. So she told us how to lay towels on the floor, and she said, right, you know, told me how to crouch down, and she said, right, you're gonna have to push and deliver him. And then when he came out, because my waters had just broke, he was breathing. He had the ability to breathe for a short while. And so she said, oh, you know, she told my husband how to give him mouth to mouth. So I was holding his little hand, my baby, not my husband. And my husband was giving him mouth to mouth. And then my son woke up because the ambulance arrived. And so my son's 5 and a half at this point, and I knew he couldn't see everything. So my husband leaves. So I start giving my baby mouth to mouth. And then the two paramedics came in, one guy super in control, one terrified, a young Australian guy. And so that didn't help matters, because he was so frightened, you could see it. And gosh, you know, I don't remember parts of that morning, but I remember them saying, can you get to the ambulance? And I'm sure I walked there, you know.
Okay.
You know, and got to the ambulance, and I remember my baby lying on my stomach in the ambulance, and I was just stroking him, and he died. He was dead.
Pippa.
And it's just unbelievable that this happens to anybody, and any of the experiences happen to anybody. And you know, little guy, just bless him, just lay, you know, poor old thing. And get to the hospital, everyone crowding around you in A&E. Doctor comes down, pushes my placenta out, and then we get wheeled up to a room, private, not private as in NHS, but private from the ward.
Yeah.
But you're on the labor ward, So
yeah, of course,
all day long we're just hearing babies being born. And because I was in such a state of shock and trauma, I kept saying to them, oh my God, is that my baby?
Oh my God.
You know, is he, did you revive him? Is he okay? I can hear my baby outside. Oh, you're just, you just can't help any of it. You know, you really are not, you know, with anything at the time, obviously.
Of course.
You know, and then we spent time with our baby and it was lovely. That part was so lovely, being with him. Mm-hmm. And he was very cute and we, you know, took photos and had that time, although it was...
How many weeks is this, Pippa?
Pregnant?
Yeah.
20.
20, right.
Yeah. And see, he's a proper person. His ears are little cauliflowers and, you know, you can't, his eyes weren't open. But, you know, he resembled in the facial shape my son, and he had all his limbs and fingers and toes and everything. Yeah, gorgeous. But, yeah, then you just have to leave hospital and try and find out a way that you are going to be able to live with this. Mm-hmm. Because it's as everybody listening and you guys, it's unbearable. Like it's actually unbearable. You know, I've spoken about this before, but I did contemplate suicide one night because I literally couldn't wake up the next day and have that reality again. Because, you know, waking up every day and going, your chest tightens and you say, it really happened to me. Like my baby died, you know? So that was a tricky night, but ended, got through it, you know, spoke to my husband all night. We were up till the early hours and it was not bearable, but we got through it. And then you just try and find a way to live with this. But for me, my age was apparent in my own mind, and I'd been told already, oh, you're very old, you know.
What you want to hear. Well,
I think everything in the hospital system needs a complete overhaul and re-education, but that's another conversation. And you know, I just wanted to try immediately, as so many of us do, because you just want a baby and you think it's going to fix you, and maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Some people it might be that absolute, you know, distraction and joy that they need to allow the grief to not be so intense after the death of their baby. But yeah, I tried again, and almost not immediately, but in August, my son died in June, and the hospital advised me that it was too early. But obviously I was like, well, if there's a chance, I will take it. And it didn't work. And as we all know, that 2 week wait is, honestly, I think you should be sedated for 2 weeks and woken
that's
up
what
again.
I said I wanted to be put to sleep.
You're not the first person to say that.
It's, but it's so intense, isn't it? And I don't know if you guys were the same, but I was weeing on sticks after 7 days when I was told 14. You know, I was like, oh, but let's just try. But it's, you know, no one's mental and no one's crazy. You're just in this complete world of not obsession, even, but in many cases it's obsession. I mean, in my case, I think it was obsession, but you know, where you just really need this to happen. And you know, I was 40 at this point, so therefore for me it was just like, oh sugar, I might not get any more eggs, or we don't know what's going on. So round three in total, but round two after the loss of my son, so we did round three, and then and then I just kept going. Every time I got my period, I got super cross. And I just phoned the people that I got to know, like the really nice nurses. And I was like, can I speak to so-and-so, please? And they'd be like, very great. I'd be like, fuck, it hasn't happened again. When can I come back in? And she's like, are you okay? I was like, yes, just book me back in now. Book me in. And they were wonderful with my... I will say they were crazy with my craziness. They were super sweet to me. You need to find someone at the IVF clinic who you really connect with, I think. They can allow you to be yourself.
Yeah, that's actually really good advice.
Yeah, because if you keep going to different people, then they don't know your story. You haven't got that rapport with them. So I actually, on most of my appointments, I always asked for the same person to see if they were there. And it really helped. So then round four... And I remember, this is the like, this is the moment that I really sort of thought, oh, blimey, I'm lost in all this now. So I did a pregnancy test and it was definitely one line, but I could see two. I could see a faint two. And so I ran round to my friend's house, and it was the same friend, actually Charlotte, that took my elder son when I phoned her in the middle of the night when my son died. And I just told her what happened, and she just organized everything with my son. It was awesome. But I ran round to her and I was like, oh my God, Charlotte, let's go under that, you know, skylight in your kitchen and check the pregnancy test. So she and I, like completely loopy individuals, I'm jumping up and down going, I think there's a line. And she's going, I do too. I think I can see it. And I was like, oh my God. And we were hugging and, you know, and literally I've got a blank, or, you know, like no line pregnancy test in front of me. We're both,
it's,
you know,
mental though, what your eyes do to you. Because I've been in that situation before where I'm convinced there's a line. I take it to my husband being like, there's definitely a line there. He's like, no, there isn't.
Yes.
Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then I realise maybe it's to do with the shadow.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I was in broad daylight. It was my mind.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, then I got my period again and round four didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, goodness, I just asked the clinic. I said, look, can we just do a different protocol? Can we just switch things up?
Yeah.
And it worked. And I got more embryos than I did the first time. And yeah, and I was 41 mm-hmm. and way more embryos of a good enough quality to go through to blastocyst than we had the first time.
Wow.
And, you know, so equally, when people say your age is a factor, yeah, it absolutely is. There's no denying medical science. But with me, it is sort of proof that, and I'm not trying to give anyone false hope, but it's proof that I got a completely different and much more, you know, joyful result at 41.
I suppose drugs have different effects on different people, right? And I suppose you found the protocol that worked for you, I guess. And I suppose that's...
Yeah, and it was much shorter, didn't get depressed.
I mean,
didn't put weight on. And, you know, blimey.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then got pregnant. Everything was going well. And I was having... Literally, I was paying for extra scans this time. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have to throw some money at this because I cannot do that again. So they'd already said, look, you're probably going to have a cerclage if you have another baby. So I was already aware.
Yeah.
So I went in for my, I don't even know what scan it was, to be honest, 11 weeks, because I was having more in between, mm-hmm. like the scheduled ones. And they said, oh God. And I said, what? And they were like, oh God, you're going to lose your, like, more or less, you're going to lose your baby.
Oh,
so yeah. It was so mental. And they were like, we can see what's happening this time, blah, blah, blah. So the next morning, literally first appointment, cerclage, totally fine. So my husband was working, he was on business at one point, and through my pregnancy, everything was fine. And then I started bleeding. And I just thought, oh God, no, this is not happening to me again. And he was coming back from the airport, and I said, please don't go to the office, please come home first. So he came home, and literally I sat on the loo and passed an enormous clot, which I thought was the baby.
Right.
And I just went downstairs to the kitchen, put some rubber gloves on, really, you know, totally pragmatic. I was like, no, this is not happening to me. Went upstairs with a Ziploc bag, a freezer bag, and picked up what I thought was my baby.
Oh my God.
In the Ziploc bag. And I said, we're going to hospital now. You know, sort of, fuck this. I cannot do this again. So we're driving to hospital. Both of us think we've lost a baby. And I don't want this to be an upsetting conversation for your listeners, because I didn't lose my baby. It was a subchorionic hemorrhage.
Yeah.
It was a large, blood clot, obviously, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. So there is no happy ending to this story, but that is a very, it's joyful that my daughter arrived.
Yeah.
And, you know,
what do you mean by that? There's no happy ending.
Well, because it's very difficult when I'm saying, I'm so happy my daughter's here. I just need to be super aware that there are people without children, and there are people who are going through fertility. And I just, it's,
and also, you lost a son.
I did. Yeah.
She's not a replacement, presumably.
No. It's just, I don't, you know, when you almost feel like, in this community and because of everything we've all been through, it's just kinder to not be as celebratory as you would be with your husband, for example.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the spaces where people are, you know, having the issues that I've totally been through it. You know, my son did die at 5 months and I've had 6 rounds of IVF and it was really tough. Mm-hmm. And it is that thing that, I don't know, I don't want anyone listening to feel more disheartened by something I say than hopeful.
Of course.
I don't think they would.
You don't?
No. Having heard this, I think, you know, you have been through a lot, as you say. Mm. And I think, you know, most people listening would be very happy to hear that this good. Is the ending. Mm. Obviously, nothing will replace your son and you still have a very sad and traumatic story.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the ending is happier, gladly. But yeah, I think people would be happy for you. I think definitely.
I just think, you know, for people that are in the mid stages or I just think it's so difficult. It's so difficult. I did try throughout my entire time to not be angry at other people or jealous. There were moments, of course there were, I kept that really in the forefront of my mind. Please don't get consumed with anger or jealousy because that's about somebody else. Like, I can have the guilt and I can have the denial and I can have the longing and they're all my emotions. But when I'm directing them at other people, it really bothered me, you know?
I think that's admirable.
It's hard. I'm not a saint. And I did look at some pregnant women and think, oh my God, I literally don't hate you, but I hate the fact that this isn't happening to me, you know? But yeah, it's hard not to get consumed.
Did you, I mean, this is kind of a stupid question really, but I'm going to ask
it's
it anyway.
It's not a stupid question.
Did you notice emotionally differences in in all three of your pregnancies? So your first pregnancy obviously happened fairly easily. Like, you didn't seem to have any massive challenges during the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Your second pregnancy was comparatively, I suppose, easy until it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And your third pregnancy was hard won. And it sounds like you had kind of moments of trauma all the way through. Did you find it became progressively harder to enjoy it? Did you enjoy your first pregnancy? Did you feel able to relax during it?
Didn't love it.
Okay.
Mainly because I this isn't a vanity thing. This is an energy level thing. I was super tired all the time.
I
put on loads of weight. I mean, I'm, you know, I ran the marathon. I used to be, in addition to my career in fashion, I was a spin instructor on Sundays and in the evenings because I am not obsessed with exercising, but I love exercising.
Yeah.
So this all changed for me within my first pregnancy and I became very sluggish and had to continue working, which was fine. But it was always in on shoots in studios. And at that time, my experience of the magazine that I was at, nobody was very forgiving of a pregnant person.
Right.
So it was quite tough in the way I was treated in that particular magazine. And I remember being sent to Paris with two suitcases, quite heavily pregnant, to do a shoot. And they booked me on the 5:40 train from from St. Pancras. And I'm just like, wow. Okay, wow.
Zero fucks given.
Wow, okay. And, you know, that was the culture at the magazine at the time. I'm pretty sure everything like that's changed now. My son is, you know, 9, quite a while ago. So there was that side of things. And I did get preeclampsia. And I was, gigantic at the end because of all that was going on in my body that I didn't realize. But, yes, didn't love it. Second pregnancy, I was already feeling terrible from the drugs, from the IVF drugs at the beginning, because that protocol wasn't the best for me, but nobody knew it wasn't the best for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so already sluggish, super down, middle of winter, loads of weight on. Difficult, you know, difficult. And super sick. I'm always super sick in my pregnancies.
Right, which is not very helpful.
It's just yuck, right? It's just not great.
Yeah.
But then my third pregnancy with Audrey, loved it.
Okay.
Loved it. It was, when did we do that IVF round? She was born in, She was born in April. My maths isn't working right now, but it was definitely summertime, right? So sun was out. I was walking my son to school every day, going for extra long walks afterwards. You know, always walking. I ate really healthily through this pregnancy, and that's unlike me because I normally go for sweets and, you know, fish cakes and chips. But it's super healthy, and it made a huge difference to my pregnancy by actually taking care of myself this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really enjoyed the pregnancy with Audrey because podcast was in, you know, mega walks, just a whole difference in how I treated my body throughout it rather than just letting go and eating what I wanted and feeling very down and sluggish.
And what about kind of in your head, were you kind of feeling anxious? Were you able to kind of contain that anxiety?
No, not at all. Because every time I felt something or, you know, discharge would come out, I just have to go to the nearest shop, changing room or my bathroom at home. And, you know, it's exhausting because you're continually thinking that every single thing in your body is a negative and that your baby's going to die again.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the news with how my baby had moved before the cerclage was fitted the next morning, that wasn't great, but it was like a real phew moment. Like, we got it sorted. You know, the hemorrhage, but again, it was totally shit. But then the heartbeat was found and it was explained what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So there were all these moments throughout, but it was just a continual anxiety throughout the whole pregnancy that I cannot go through this again. Like, I just worried that I would kill myself, honestly, if I had to go through that again. Because it was so bad. It was so bad that I just thought, I do not know if I could survive a second time. I probably would have, because I have a son and I have a lovely husband and everything else would have hopefully become clear.
Yeah.
But there was that fear that I don't know if I could continue if it happened again.
I think that's more common than a lot of people let on.
Right.
That kind of, those kind of thoughts creeping in.
Yeah.
Did you find ways of kind of dealing with those? I mean, you mentioned before that you just stayed up all night talking to your husband, which seems like one coping strategy.
Yeah, that was really helpful, I think, talking, you know. But after a while as well, you can't keep talking to the same people about the same things because they're not counsellors, they're your friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was always very aware when I'd really gone through it to then pull back a bit and just not make the conversation always about the same subject or make it heavy, you know. So I think if I'd have found a good counsellor, I 100% would have paid for a counsellor.
Yeah.
Because I think looking back at it, that's the one area that I didn't get any assistance on was my mental health. And that is the area that I think is your most important part of this, whether it's, you know, you can talk to your girlfriends, you can talk to your husband, but I just think getting a trained grief counsellor is one of the most important things you can do.
Yeah. Everyone we've ever spoke to about getting counselling has been like, you can just never have enough counselling. There's just not possible to have enough. So it's kind of, you know.
But like, I wish at the hospital they would actually have a system where they would recommend, I'm going to, you know, hopefully put this to, you know, Sajid Javid, but who I'm in conversation with his team at the moment. But what I would say is at the hospital, a bereavement counsellor came in who was more like a caricature from a working title film. It was so false and so whispery and so put on that my husband and I asked her politely to leave because it was not helping. You know, tell me about your feelings.
No, please,
I'm not telling you about my feelings.
My baby boy has just died.
Yeah, and then I, you know, I spoke to my GP and I said, I need help. And then the next day after my phone call, my doctor at the time, even though I didn't live in the neighbourhood anymore, was in Notting Hill because I loved my doctor surgery. She said, right, I'm going to put you on the list for counselling, which was a general NHS counselling service, meaning, unbeknown to me at the time, there is no specialist. You just get someone who is trained in general counselling, right, which is great. Don't get me wrong. It's great that there is a service for it. Mm-hmm. However, if you are dealing with a death or a particular type of mental issue, you need a specialist in that area.
Absolutely.
For sure. So the next day after I made the phone call, the Grenfell Tower happened.
Right.
And those poor people 100% took priority, and I get it. And I am with the doctor surgery for giving them priority over me, for sure. But it meant that I was a month down the line for a phone call, and that is fine. It wasn't fine for me, but it's fine in the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And then I got a phone call, and because everyone in the neighborhood was so overwhelmed, all the doctor surgeries, it was a phoning council service at the beginning. And so I'm talking to them. And at the time, we were living in a rental and had all of our stuff in a garage attached to the rental. And they were asking me all these questions like, where are your belongings? And I would say, oh, they're in a garage, you know, attached to the place we're renting. Anyway, they hadn't read my notes and they'd assumed I was a Grenfell victim for about 3 weeks.
Oh,
so I was having this counselling that was making no sense to me, but...
Right. And you're like, there must be method in their madness. I'll just go with it.
Yeah. I was like, I'm too traumatised. Oh, I'm going to answer all of these questions that make absolutely no sense to me, but I'm going to answer the questions. So anyway, that happened. And another time I turned up, my counsellor was on holiday but hadn't emailed me to tell me. So it was a real letdown. So what I would have done... But when you're grieving and in that much, you know, shock and trauma, there's no way I'm going to Google best counselling service in my neighbourhood and spend hours trying to find a counsellor. It's impossible mentally.
Yeah.
You know, I could barely make a cup of tea. So that was a disaster. But looking back at it, I think the hospital should have said, here are four grief counsellors that we've vetted in your neighbourhood. There are four numbers. And whether they're NHS or not, I think an NHS and a private option should be given. And, you know, depending on how quickly you need to see somebody, you might have to find the money to do private, or you can wait for the NHS if you're mentally able to. And I think that should be immediate information given to people who've lost a pregnancy at any stage. Is here are some counsellors that are...
Yeah.
That will deal with this particular area.
Gobsmacked that it didn't happen, to be honest.
It's just crazy. They give you leaflets and then I'm like, I don't know what the hell this means, because my baby just died and I want to go home and, you know, I'm not able to read or absorb or understand anything.
Yeah.
I need someone to sort of help me a bit. So I will say this, I'm not slamming the NHS. They are amazing and we rely on them for so much. But they're within pregnancy loss, it's really, really dated.
Yeah, I mean,
in how they deal with people.
Yeah, and you also, you know, your experience is so determined by who is treating you.
For sure, 100%.
Pippa, I'm keen to know you. I mean, it's fair to say you have a generous following on Instagram. How much of your journey did you share? Because obviously your followers are, you know, it's all about your fashion. What did you share anything? And, you know, how did it kind of play out? Did you feel like you should? Did you rather?
Well, what happened was I'd obviously got to the 3 month stage, and I think lots of people out and about, I think in the industry that fashion that I'm in, is loads of social events, right? So you're always talking, and I love to talk. Oh my God, love it. So I'm really open. Oh yes, you know, infertility, IVF. So I think loads of people knew, and I had mentioned before on Instagram years before I'd love a second baby and all of this stuff. So 3 month mark comes, baby bump goes up, ta-da.
Yeah.
And then maybe one or two more bump pictures, I guess, in between everything else I was doing. And then Axel dies, and I'm getting emails all the time, really nice ones. How's the bump? Anybody in any industry or any friend group would get, right? So I was like, hey, how do I deal with this? So it took about maybe a week after he died, and I couldn't take one more email, couldn't, or message, you know, even though they were super nice. And I just took a photo of his footprints with some flowers that someone had sent me, and sat in the bedroom on my own and just composed an email that was the tribute to him. And I put the picture of his footprints up. Ooh, getting quite teary talking about it.
Oh, Pippa.
And just said, told people what happened, you know, and I said, thank you for the kind comments about my bump, but there is no more bump. Well, there is a bump, but there's nothing in there. So, you know, so that was a really immediate and, for want of a better word, effective way to let people know I'd lost my baby.
Yeah.
And then, like, thousands of DMs, because they said, I couldn't like your post because I didn't know if I could like it because it's about your baby dying. But here's, you know, I wanted to let you know that I'm okay. And I think I ended up writing back to almost everybody, which took so long, but I was grieving and it was quite nice, you know, at the time.
Yeah, it was helpful.
I don't think it was.
Okay.
I think it was just, it was compounding a grief that was already extremely intense.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I don't think it helped. And I think what I should have done is just come off of social media for 2 months and spent time with friends in person. I don't think it was very good mentally at all to be on social media after I lost my baby.
Did you feel any kind of resentment that you had to share that news?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. No, and everyone was super kind. And then loads of people that I know were really sweet to say it happened to them at this stage. And before this, I didn't know anyone, you know. So that was one positive, in that I could talk to people who understood in some sense, you know, some people had full-term losses, some people had four-week losses, but it was a joint conversation and everybody understood, you know. But no, I just... Again, looking back at things now and how different social media is, even now, 4 years later, than how it was when I was on it, when I explained that I'd lost my baby, I just think there's lots of areas that are potentially more damaging than helpful.
Mm.
And I think in-person support and going to support groups in person and having a coffee with somebody that you might meet actually on Instagram that DMs you in person, I just think this... you know, this space of no personal connection, as in you don't know them. And it's so much time I spent on my phone. And I just think it wasn't ultimately helpful.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Pippa, I guess final question, which is that you've got a book coming out.
I do.
Can you tell us all about it? What's it called? When's it coming out? What's it about?
So it's called Beyond Grief, Navigating the Journey of Pregnancy and Baby Loss. And it's out next August. So there's, you know, it's quite a way off, but I'm, you know, I've written it. Well, actually, I'm submitting it next week to my publisher. I know it's been an intense, incredible, unbelievably lovely experience to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard stories from kind contributors who are in my book, that even I, in my, what I believed was in-depth knowledge of this area, didn't know. There is so much that I didn't know, and I really thought I knew pretty much everything, you know? So basically, it's all of the things, it's an answer to every question that I wish I'd known when my baby died. And there are contributor stories from 3 weeks of pregnancy loss to full-term pregnancy loss. It's every sort of, not every scenario, obviously there's too many, but there's a wide range of contributor stories within the book that I'm just hoping will allow people to see the bigger, broader picture of everything that happens. That I've worked with really lovely doctors and psychotherapists to give me the advice that I wasn't able to give in the book myself.
Yeah.
And there's lots of my experiences and, lots of things that, looking back 4 years now, 4 years since it happened, I really believe I know I can help people by telling them the things I didn't know then.
Yeah.
You
know,
sure. That's pretty much what our book is.
It's right. It's just that, it's just sort of saying, God, I wish I'd known all of these things.
Yeah.
And here's some hopefully comforting advice and knowledge from others and shared stories. And, you know, I love my book. It's just turned out to be so much better than I expected it to be. Mm-hmm. And because of my experience, I have no qualms at all in saying how amazing my book is, because I'm allowed to. Because if this was about shoes or, I don't know, travel, I think I'd not be able to be quite so confident, because it's not the done thing. We're English, right? Mm-hmm. But because of the subject matter, I think I'm just going to be able to say exactly how I feel about it without worrying that I'm coming across as sort of an egomaniac.
I like that attitude a lot, because you worked really hard on it.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, well, Pepper, look, thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
And I think everyone would be keeping their eyes peeled for the book. Yeah. When can you pre-order?
I know there's a pre-order link now. I mean, it's very, very early, isn't it? But yes, it's out next August. Okay. And I've loved talking to you. And because of my nature, I actually want to talk to you for another hour.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I also hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll be back next week with...
I haven't decided.
Oh, you haven't decided who it is yet?
No.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Because I think you're doing an interview next week, aren't you?
I am. Well, yes. Yes, I am.
Yes. So it might be that person, might be the other person.
Yeah, excellent. Don't forget to, after you've ordered our book, order Pippa Vosper's book. That's Beyond Grief, Navigating the Journey of Pregnancy and Baby Loss.
You guys are going to have the most well-stocked infertility libraries.
We sure are.
And also, you know, if you fancy something lighter, read Ghosts.
Indeed. There you go. All right, guys, have a great week.
Have a lovely time, and we'll see you very soon.
Speak to you very soon.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.